The Planned Parenthood Federation of America is the country's largest single provider of reproductive health services. The organization serves about 2.5 million clients annually at 650 clinics, while contributing to research and education and undertaking political advocacy and global partnerships to safeguard and expand services. The newly realigned Planned Parenthood of Michigan serves about 65,000 clients through 20 centers statewide, with one in the Upper Peninsula at Marquette. We'll look at the organization, mission, and services, along with current issues and trends affecting Planned Parenthood, just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guest is Planned Parenthood of Michigan President and CEO, Lori Carpentier. Welcome.
Thank you, Bill. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. First, by way of background, you graduated from Michigan State University in 1984 with a degree in...
Go Green.
Okay. With a degree in social work and a specialty in adolescent sexuality. Can you tell us something about where you grew up, your upbringing, and what led you in that direction for a career?
I grew up in Metro Detroit, been a Michigander my whole entire life, and I've always just been really fascinated with adolescents and their development, and specifically around sexuality. So when I was at State all those years ago, I had a good advisor that helped me kind of craft a specialty, if you will, that included sexuality, and then I set out to try to get paid to talk about sex, and I landed at Planned Parenthood.
Okay. In 1985, you joined Planned Parenthood as a medical assistant, then held a number of education posts leading to education director, then patient services director, medical affairs vice president, and by 2005, Planned Parenthood Mid and South Michigan CEO before taking full reins of the statewide organization.
Indeed.
Now, how would you describe the growth of Planned Parenthood through that time, and tell us why the chapters North and South this year were merged into a single Planned Parenthood of Michigan?
Well, I think that in many people's mind, they sort of cut Planned Parenthood out of mainstream healthcare provision. But in fact, that's what we've always done with a good dollop of sort of public healthcare. Okay. And so that's who we have always been. We've tried to be the safety net that people land in when they fall through the cracks of what the traditional healthcare system does or doesn't provide them appropriately. Okay. And so over the years, we have understood our need to be part of exactly what's occurring. And as the provision of healthcare has gotten more and more complicated across the state, and across the country, frankly. And with the advent of the Affordable Care Act and many more people being covered under insurances, et cetera, it just seemed like the right business move to come together, to join forces so that we can kind of make sure that our very thin dollars actually end up as closely as possible in the provision of direct services and not in administrative costs. So that's really about what this is. But as a result, we are no longer in competition. The two agencies were somewhat in competition for state dollars, and we can have a shared vision for the state of Michigan aligned with the kind of work that, the public health department, et cetera, is trying to get done across the state.
Was there a lot of administrative duplication in the two, having the two?
Well, you know, when you have two organizations, you have two CEOs, you have two, you know, CFOs, you've had, so yes, there was some duplication. The primary part that we are very laser focused on is making sure that the patient provision part is as directly is what is mostly funded. And that didn't change for the organization in this merger. The people that were staffing the health centers, the people that are, that the people that rely on us, our patients, those are the same folks.
Okay. Let's sort of look at the landscape view, and it's a big one. One remarkable thing about Planned Parenthood is its size and scope.
Yes.
There's a national federation, state affiliates, a growing global network now, advocacy organizations, and even a super PAC. How are those all linked?
Well, I think it's very confusing for many people because there are the organizations at this, at the federal and national level as well as at the state level. Mm-hmm. But basically, you can think of Planned Parenthood as having three legs to this stool. Okay. One is the provision of our health services, and that is what our health centers provide across the state and across the country. The second is all of the educational services that we provide in communities with high schools and college students and families and parents and all sorts of folks are the participants in our education programs. Okay. And the third thing is advocacy, because over time, the issues that we all believe in and back have gotten increasingly more political. We do spend a fair amount of our time and frankly, some of our resources on the political side. Okay. So trying to help legislators understand the policies and how they actually work and affect the people that are part of their constituencies, mm-hmm. in addition to, you know, the old saying about if in the legislature, if you can't change the people, then you got to change the people. So we work hard to make sure that the folks in the legislature, both at the state and federal level, are people mm-hmm. that espouse our values and will support our services.
Okay. Still trying to get a handle on size. I searched audits and other materials from and about Planned Parenthood. Federation assets are in the hundreds of millions. The employment pay scale for credentialed workers is fairly good. Top executives are one percenters. But I was unable to get a figure on employees. Their numbers?
Yeah, you know what, I don't know the national employee number, okay. but I can tell you in the state of Michigan, we're a little over 240 people
okay.
In these 20 health centers, and the vast majority of people that are employed by Planned Parenthood of Michigan are direct program people, okay. and many fewer are administrators.
What's the annual budget, and how much of that comes from state and federal funding?
Just about $20 million. Mm-hmm. About 45% is represented in state and federal dollars, and there's a big misunderstanding about how that works.
Okay.
When people hear that Planned Parenthood is funded by the federal government, I think many people have the misperception that we get a giant check on an annual basis, which yeah. couldn't be farther from the truth. Yeah. How this works is that we are a disproportionate provider of the services that are covered by Medicaid in any given state.
Right.
So when people talk about federal dollars support, what it really is reimbursement for services provided just like any other medical provider that people think of. So when people come and they access our care and they get a basic women's health exam with their pap smear and breast exam and other cancer screenings for sexually transmitted infections, etc. If they are a Medicaid recipient, we bill the Medicaid program for reimbursement for that care.
Okay.
And Medicaid, by and large, is notoriously poor reimbursement. So the only way we make
down the number of OBGYNs in the northern part of Michigan.
It has, one of my favorite statistics right now is that every county in the state of Michigan has at least one veterinarian, but 22 have no OBGYN providers.
Okay.
So we get bad reimbursement, frankly, and it does not cover our costs. So the way this works is that we're this elegant combination of public and private dollars.
Okay.
We rely on and are grateful to the benefactors who put money in an envelope and trust their hard-earned dollars to us to turn it into services under the sense rights that we all espouse, and
okay.
and that's the way it works. It's kind of a
public-private group of donors, right?
A very large group of donors, yeah. About 21% of our budget on an annual basis comes from individuals and foundations.
Wow. The how well are your patient operations supported by private insurance? Especially now that with provisions under the Affordable Care Act.
Well, that was one of the big transitions we had to make, was that for a long, long time, now we're talking maybe up to 10, 15 years ago, a significant proportion of our patients opened their wallet. And they paid some subsidized portion of their care.
Okay.
So depending on their family's income, they paid on a sliding fee scale based on what they were able to pay under the rules that we're supposed to follow.
I see.
Many more people now have Medicaid, or in Michigan, the expansion of Medicaid, the Healthy Michigan program, or are covered from programs under the exchange, under the Affordable Care Act.
Okay.
So now a much larger proportion of our patients have some level of insurance, but that still hovers at about the 60% range, meaning that about 40% of our folks are still not covered. But we have contracts with virtually all of the major health plans that you would think of.
Okay.
And our patients use their insurance just like they would with any other health care provider.
All right. The stated mission of Planned Parenthood, briefly, is to provide comprehensive reproductive and complementary health care services in settings that protect privacy and individual rights. to advocate public policies that support rights and access, mm-hmm. and to foster education and research. Was all that part of the vision when Margaret Sanger, her sister and a friend in 1916, opened that original birth control clinic in Brooklyn?
Well, I think it's safe to say their efforts were not organized in the way that they are now. I would like to think that 100 years later were significantly more sophisticated. But certainly because at the time, Margaret Sanger and the other women, and there were many who were involved in this movement, understood that what they were doing was frankly illegal. And many of them were arrested, spent time in jail. Some of them managed hunger strikes, et cetera, to try to change the laws. But so even from the start, there was an aspect of an understanding that this was not going to be popular and that they were going to have to be advocates in addition to trying to provide actual services. So while that might not have been how the organization was formed, it was certainly the spirit from the start.
Okay. Activities now include not only birth control, but hundreds of thousands of pap tests and breast exams, mm-hmm. millions of tests for STDs, including HIV.
Yep.
That doesn't include all the education and counseling. What does that tell us about, or what should that tell us about the need and preferences for your approach?
Well, I think, you know, one of our taglines, or maybe our main tagline, is care no matter what. And mm-hmm. we think that has all sorts of meanings. One is that when women and men and young people come to us, they can count on our clinicians meeting them where they are, meeting their needs as the patient defines them, engaging patients in their care, and offering the care without judgment. Yeah. So the no matter what is really no matter what your sexual orientation is, no matter what your personal preferences are in your private relationships, no matter if you have money, no matter if the legislature is trying to hound us and put up difficult laws that make all of this tough to do. That's really how we believe. Okay. So I think that permeates the way we approach everything, is sort of this tenacity to make sure that people get what they need. You know, in a very basic way, if women and families can't decide when and how many children to have, that impacts their economic participation. Sure. It really has an impact on who they can be in society. Yeah. And that's one of our basic tenets, is that women should be able to participate in all of the ways that make them a functional part of our world.
You also counsel men, I understand it, and I recently have started, I don't know if this is too recent, but recently have started counseling LGBT.
It's actually not as recent as you might think. We have always been the place that was welcoming to everybody. That's not new for us. While, you know, it's sort of in vogue to be an LGBT supporter, I hope that Planned Parenthood has been seen as good allies in that community for a long time. And they knew that they could come to us without judgment about their personal choices, and certainly we stand by that. So poor people who some people consider on the fringes, is the people that Planned Parenthood are embracing first and foremost.
Okay, I'm gonna take a moment here to remind our viewers, and especially our radio listeners, that we're talking about Planned Parenthood with Planned Parenthood of Michigan President and CEO Lori Carpentier. What became the American Birth Control League, then the Planned Parenthood Federation of America later, was the only national birth control organization until the 1960s, as I understand it. And it was mainly volunteer at that time, I think. The focus is still mainly on prevention, with 80% of patients receiving services to avert unintended pregnancies. Now, it's reported that over 500,000 unintended pregnancies are prevented annually. Do we have an idea of the impact on unintended pregnancies in Michigan?
I think that what we do know is that, I'm not sure that I can come up with a figure of the number of unintended pregnancies, but we know that the rate of unintended pregnancy in the U.S. is approaching half, which is significantly higher than it is in many other industrialized countries. Mm-hmm. Many places in Europe, it's less than 10%. So the fact that ours hovers around 48-49%, it really sets us apart in a way that I don't think we should be proud of.
And I think when we hear it's going down, that's pretty relative.
That's right. It is relative. And we are proud to say, and we believe that as an organization nationally, Planned Parenthood is part of the fact that we are at an all-time low, a 40-year low, in teen pregnancy rates in this country.
Okay.
And we don't have to wonder what happens when with STI rates or teen pregnancy rates when Planned Parenthood is withdrawn. And a few years ago, the Texas legislature, in all of their wisdom, decided to take Planned Parenthood out of the equation for women's health care. And what they found is that their unintended pregnancy rates went up, their teen pregnancy rates went up, their STD rates went up.
Okay.
More tragically, maybe, is that we don't have to wonder what happens when women don't have ready access to abortion services. We already know in Texas, they're trying to go back to the days where they're inducing abortion themselves. And instead of the old coat hanger days that we used to hear about, now it's purchasing unknown contraception or pills on the internet that they think will induce an abortion.
It could be dangerous.
And they end up in ERs not even knowing what they've ingested. Yeah. So I think the evidence for how we contribute to society and making it sort of safer and more productive for women is pretty clear.
Okay. Some 84% of patients are 20 years old and above.
Mm-hmm.
But a big focus across the culture, as you mentioned, is teen sexuality and pregnancy prevention. You're the largest provider of sex education in the country,
mm-hmm.
and your programs for teens are unique and extensive.
Can
you give us an idea of their range and content?
I think this is another one of those. There are many things about Planned Parenthood I think are too often a well-kept secret. I think, first of all, you highlighted, Bill, that the vast majority of our patients are not teenagers. They are people that are a little bit older. That is surprising to people. But we do understand the importance of giving young people, teenagers, information and access to preventative services and the knowledge they need to prevent unintended pregnancy,
okay.
and to make healthy choices around sexuality that include the choice to not be engaged in sexual activity.
Right.
So we're very proud of the fact that we do abstinence programs, but when teens choose to become sexually active, we have a number of programs that are often based as a peer education program, so young people get extensive training. And at one of our centers across the country, we have 6 such programs in the state of Michigan, and then they go out and they become the experts in their high schools or in their peer group
okay.
about sexuality, sexual decision making,
mm-hmm.
about sexual assault prevention, about relationships, about consent issues,
right.
all of those things. And, you know, we've known forever, I'm sure it was true for you, where you got most of your sexuality information is from your friends.
Your peers.
And what we understood is that the vast majority of that was either myth or completely inappropriate. So we decided a number of years ago, 30 years ago, when I first started at Planned Parenthood, that we really needed to replace poor information with solid information, so that's what we've done. But we don't end it there. We also think that a big valuable part of how families should function is that parents are the primary sexuality educators of their kids. And what we know is that it's changing now, thankfully. But our parents, for instance, were not necessarily comfortable in that role. So in addition to sort of going and helping the teens understand their body and their development, et cetera, we've for decades worked with families and parents to say, how do you talk to your kids about sex and how do you answer those questions you're dreading being asked in the car, et cetera, and have been a resource to families in that way for a very long time as well.
Which programs are in greatest demand? Are they the teen programs? I mean, overall, you're doing 1.5 million people a year across the country.
Indeed. Yeah. And for some of those, they're extensive programs with well-vetted, well-versed prevention programs where young people are involved in multiple sessions of sexuality education.
Okay.
And what we know is that those have been evidence-based curricula that produce outcomes that actually reduce unintended pregnancy rates, reduce risky sexual behavior,
mm-hmm.
and increase the likelihood that a teen will get out of their teens without an incurable sexually transmitted infection
sure.
or a pregnancy that they
yeah.
weren't planning on. So those are very, very popular. But we do things, like I said, with parents on college campuses, especially around sexual assault prevention
mm-hmm.
and consent issues. We do a number of things in various parts of the state on LGBT issues
okay.
and the acceptance. And we fully embrace the role of being part of the allies of people that are thinking about reproductive justice in a much broader context, like not only about birth control and sexually transmitted infections, but
right.
how does that fit in with economic security? And how does that fit in with physical security? How does racial issues come come in with that? How do sexism issues come in with that? So we really wrap our arms around a very large swath of information and values that we share with many people in the progressive movement.
That's a big theme right now. Many women around the world are deprived of basic freedoms that include lack of access to reproductive health care. So much so that it's considered one of the major challenges in the pursuit of human rights generally.
That's right.
Is that...
That's absolutely correct. You know, for a long time, we bifurcated rights into women's rights and human rights.
Okay.
And what Planned Parenthood has been saying for a very long time is women's rights are human rights.
Yeah.
And what we know in underdeveloped countries is when you go in and you make sure that women and families get access to adequate health care that include contraception, and you don't subject them to repeated pregnancies on an annual basis, and with very high infant mortality rate and maternal mortality rates,
sure,
that you affect the economics of a country. And so that's really, you referred to our global work,
yeah,
and we are working not only in sub-Saharan Africa, but in Central America and South America to ensure that people actually have the kind of services that are very basic and not difficult or expensive to provide,
okay,
but actually have a huge impact on the economics of a country.
Okay. Planned Parenthood has been pushing against social and religious and ideological headwinds since its inception.
Always.
You mentioned that. And while efforts to build reproductive rights into law saw a significant milestone with Roe versus Wade in 1973, the pushback from conservatives has sought to limit access, especially to abortions. We should note that only 3%, I've read, of all Planned Parenthood health services entail abortion. But what do you say to people, many of whom may be reasonable people of goodwill,
mm-hmm,
who believe that abortion on demand and even some forms of birth control are morally wrong?
I think that we certainly uphold people's rights to their belief systems, and up to and including the right to picket outside of our centers. We know that that's a free speech issue, and we understand the importance of that in this country and how our country is based on that tenet. I also know that Planned Parenthood does more every single day, than any other group will ever do to avert unintended pregnancy by providing birth control and contraceptive services, educational services, counseling, et cetera. And I think that's what we rely on. Planned Parenthood trusts women,
mm-hmm,
first and foremost, and we trust women in the context of their families and their faith and their physician to actually figure out what ought to be done best for them. Contrarily, we also support the people that come into our centers that say, I'm pregnant, I wasn't planning on it, but I really have decided I want to have this baby.
Okay.
Or abortion is not for me. And in those instances, we can offer in some of our centers prenatal care.
Okay.
Or we make referrals to those folks who feel like they want to make an adoption plan, that that's the best outcome. The way we approach this is we sit down with women and whoever they choose to involve in this decision making and say, what is best for you? And how are you approaching this? And what aid can we give you to get you there? That's
okay.
Our basic value. And I think that is also reasonable. People that don't believe in abortions shouldn't be subjected to having to have one. I think alternatively, it's very easy to say that pregnancies are not a big issue. And you know, I hear all the time from opponents, well, they could always release them for adoption, as if a pregnancy doesn't have any bearing on the economic ability of women to continue to work, et cetera.
Right.
And I also get, frankly, quite frustrated with the plethora of folks that are pretty anti-abortion and feel like that's wrong and we shouldn't be supporting it, and also don't support the kind of safety net structural and programmatic things that will allow families to keep their heads above water.
Okay.
You know, we don't have good support from many of these same people for family leave aspects, for instance, for minimum wage things, for things that would actually give support to families that may find themselves in economic hardship. So I think those two things have to go hand in glove, and far too often in this country, certainly of late, they don't. And they become separated as if one thing doesn't have anything to do with the other.
I see. Speaking of those sorts of efforts, you mentioned Texas. Conservative states have led the effort to limit reproductive health services, quell abortions, and bolster parental authority on such matters. I know a lot of what you do is actually teach kids how to speak to parents and
mm-hmm.
vice versa.
And vice versa.
The Some of the legislation is being shot down by the courts, some is being upheld. Michigan is not considered to be among the most extreme in this sense on a national scale, but how do you rate Michigan and what do you believe voters should be most attentive to on that front?
Well, I think in fairness, Michigan is in Texas. I think we have to say that. And frankly, the governor has stood up on our behalf a couple of times when he thought some legislation would be too extreme. Okay. I don't think we can count on that as a matter of course. Mm-hmm. But I think the kinds of things we've seen in other states may be something that our legislators look at going forward. You know, for the time being, we've had a bit of a hiatus. Our legislature, and frankly the governor and the administration, is a little sidetracked by some water issues in the center of the state. So that really has kind of taken the focus
off
of us.
Which Planned Parenthood, by the way, assisted in helping.
Even before it became an issue, our patients were coming into our health center saying, you know, the water's kind of weird in Flint, and what's going on? And we were one of the ground folks that were handing out water filters and bottled water and really working our connections with the Michigan Department of Community Health to draw attention to this and saying, look, something's going on with the water. So I think that's the other way we can demonstrate the fact that we are really good community partners. It's not just about one thing for us. It's about social justice and economic justice, and we certainly work to be part of all of that. And the way we do it primarily is through our reproductive health care work.
Okay. There was a statistic that emerged not long ago that bears some scrutiny. The Michigan saw over 26,000 abortions in 2014, the last reporting year. Upper Peninsula recorded 136 abortions, with Marquette and Chippewa counties accounting for more than half of them. This represents a 6% increase in Michigan from 2013. While abortions are trending downward, I understand it, across the country. So what seems to be the explanation there?
I think there's a couple things. I think this is one thing that I actually agree with some of our opponents in the Right to Life movement, that prior to 2012, mm-hmm. the provisions for how people reported abortion instances were actually a little bit more less stringent. Planned Parenthood has always been compliant. We've reported everything because we have the big old focus is on our services and how we conduct them. But I think maybe private physicians were not reporting. So I think there's something there about the data. But in addition to that, for years and years, the state of Michigan has actually been an investor in making sure that reproductive health services and specifically contraception was part of what they were subsidizing.
Okay.
Over the last 10 years or so, they've withdrawn that support to a great degree, so that at one point it was $10 million and now it's about $200,000.
Really?
So we have disinvested in reproductive health care and specifically contraception, and I think that's part of it. The third part of this is that Ohio and some of the states around us have done considerably more strident laws, and I think we were seeing health care refugees that were crossing the state line coming to Michigan for their care.
Okay. One final question. Any thoughts on the presidential campaign? And I'm afraid it's going to have to be brief.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that nobody in the Republican Party have come forward to support women's health, so we're real clear about who we're backing.
Okay. We've been talking about Planned Parenthood with Planned Parenthood of Michigan President and CEO Lori Carpentier. Thanks for being here.
I appreciate it, Bill. Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMeet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.